Hi, everybody. Welcome to FNS Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, back to discuss some Ring of Honor wrestling tonight. A couple hours later than normal. It's a gorgeous day here in Southern Ontario, and that combined with a very light work day for me. I kind of been out on the back patio hanging out, but I thought it was about time I get down here and talk about some Ring of Honor. I believe it's episode 510 from June 27th, and I don't really have a whole lot of things to talk about in this preamble, I don't think. Let me think. Is there anything else I want to say? I don't think so. So why don't we get started talking about this action-packed edition of Ring of Honor Wrestling. So this starts out, as it usually does, with Quinn McKay welcoming us to the show. She reminds us that tonight's show will host the final match of the Survival of the Fittest tournament. And honestly, I was kind of like, oh yeah, I had already forgotten that that was the case. So that's something cool to look forward to, I think. A six-person elimination match appeals to me. It should be fun, so I'm looking forward to that main event. So we sort of get quick replays then of the finish of each of the first round matches to sort of remind us how we got to this final and who exactly is in it. So really quickly, we see Flamita pin Ray Orris, Brian Johnson rolled up Sledge in their match, Eli Isom pinned Dak Draper after he hit his promised brainbuster for the win, Chris Dickinson submitted O'Shea Edwards with, I think it was a crossface, Bandido pinned Bateman with his 21-plex, and Rhett Titus submitted Danhausen with a full Nelson Camel clutch. So that's our six competitors, the winner of those matches. That match will be the main event. But Quinn tells us first we're going to get a match between Matt Taven of the OGK and Dutch of the Righteous. And an interesting note here, at least for me, was that this is Dutch's first match in ROH. So I'm always curious to see somebody new. This is a really big man, so I don't think I've seen him wrestle anywhere in the indies. I could be wrong, but he doesn't look familiar to me. So I'm always interested to see somebody new. And luckily for me, that match starts right now. So we do get Dutch versus Matt Taven. Just a side note, I do really like the entrance music for The Righteous. I feel like it's got some early Wyatt family vibes back in NXT when they were actually really cool. So that's a plus for them, at least. We then get a video with Bateman speaking, issuing a warning for Taven as sort of Dutch is behind him, silent in the background. He says everything, he being Bateman, leading to this has been an amuse-bouche of violence. And Taven's about to learn that death walks. He tells Dutch to speak, but Dutch says nothing and the promo sort of ends. So all this violence has just been an appetizer. I guess the main course of violence is coming is essentially what we're supposed to get from this. The promo was fine, kind of also had a Wyatt family feel to it. And that, again, not in a bad way. I liked the Wyatt family from the very beginning. It sort of, Bray Wyatt sort of strayed from that. But my favorite incarnation was probably the original thing that they were doing on NXT. So when I say that in this case, I don't think it's a bad thing for The Righteous. I kind of liked it. Taven doesn't get any sort of video leading into this match, so the match just starts here. Taven tries to attack right away, but it kind of has no effect on the big man, who lands some clubbing blows to retaliate. Taven attempts a DDP shortly after, but Dutch just sort of tosses him across the ring. Taven then runs the ropes to try and get an advantage, but he just gets run over by Dutch and then some more clubbing blows. Commentary then tell us that Dutch has been programmed to hurt, and it's this idea has been sort of brainwashed or programmed. Feels like kind of like a cult narrative they're trying to tell here with The Righteous, which would make sense with the way they're presenting Vincent as well. Dutch then no-sells a dropkick, and Taven is just in shock. He can't believe that this didn't have any effect. Taven then is clotheslined over the top to the floor. Vita Von Starr sort of appears behind Taven on the other side of the barricade, grabs him, and starts to choke him out. Maria Kanellis comes down. This is the part I really didn't love. She comes down and does this stern... We're sort of reminded she's on the board of directors, so she's admonishing Von Starr and orders her to return to the back, and just, you know, she's standing her ground and being strong, and that's great, but I don't know, it kind of, I don't think it fit very well within this match, but I see what they're trying to do. They're trying to establish Maria as somebody with authority in the company, especially when it comes to the members of the women's division. So Maria finally gets her way, and Von Starr reluctantly leaves. I think they said something about Von Starr now being out of the women's tournament going forward. So I don't know if that's what Maria said because she wasn't really on mic. I might have missed it while taking notes, but I think afterwards they said Von Starr is out of the women's tournament. So it may be because of this interference. And this is again showing that Maria has some power and will issue consequences, I guess, for people interfering in matches. We get a spinning heel kick to stop Dutch's momentum once we're back in the ring. followed by a Taven suicide dive, and Dutch is finally taken off his feet out on the floor. A second dive by Taven, this time he just sort of topes right over the top rope onto Dutch. We get what they call the Aurora Borealis splash, which is a top rope splash by Taven, sorry. And Dutch kicks out at one, and commentary are sort of shocked by this because I guess this is a signature that Taven has won with in the past. Taven then counters a suplex into the climax, which is like, I think, the original Dirty Deeds, just that sort of forward DDT motion. But then Vincent appears on the stage, because I guess this is implying there might have been a pinfall after this. But here comes Vincent. Taven is obviously distracted, and like a moth to a flame, he heads up the ramp towards Vincent. And Bateman then, out of nowhere, just blindsides Taven. And then Dutch is obviously DQ'd here due to the interference by the Righteous. So there's a bunch of brawling as they're attacking Taven, obviously. Bennett shows up to try and make the save, and then security get involved to try and take control as we head into a commercial break. We come back from the break, and Vincent has a microphone, and he's about to cut a promo for us. He talks about Taven wanting fans to chant his name, but he can't get that now. I guess he's implying due to the empty arena. So his answer to Taven's challenge is a maybe. He knows Matt better than anyone, including Mike Bennett, who's standing beside him. And eventually, no one will care about Taven. And we all know that that is what is most important to Taven. So I thought I'll talk about both things, talking about the match first, I guess. I thought the match was pretty good, actually, and Dutch looked good in his debut. He was working a slow, methodical powerhouse style, which is totally fine. I think there's room for something like that in this company right now. So I thought he looked pretty good. He reminds me, in sort of size and the way he moves around the ring, like an early Big Boss Man. For those of you old enough to remember him, I am. He kind of reminds me of that. And they obviously are trying to keep him strong here. He was kicking out of signatures, shocking Matt Taven with his ability to stay on his feet. He dominated much of the action, and he didn't lose in the end, right? He did, but by DQ. So it seems like they protected him a little bit here, and he looked strong, and I'm fine with seeing more of him. I thought I saw enough here to say, yeah, I think he looked okay, and I'd like to see some more. As for the aftermath, I mean, it's kind of more of the same, right? This is the kind of thing that's been happening for months between these groups with no real resolution that I've seen. And even with very little changes, it's kind of just they're repeating things here. Vincent does cut decent promos, but they don't really go anywhere or lead to anything. Again, there's a Bray Wyatt comparison there. Says some cool words. They sound sort of poetic and whatever, but they're not really accomplishing anything. It's similar to my complaints if you listen to our main shows on Saturdays about my Inner Circle Pinnacle thoughts. Basically, that situation, it feels similar each week. They're doing very similar things, and there's not much progression, and it just starts to feel stale. Like, oh, things have broken down and the groups are brawling again. Yep, that's what happens. So for me, it's kind of hindered by the fact also that I find Bennett and Taven to be among the least sympathetic baby faces going. But I mean, I say that a fair amount on this show. If you listen to this program, you know, I just don't see, sorry, just adjusting my coffee. I just don't see Taven and Bennett as baby faces. Whereas if they were to turn heel and just become super arrogant, and I would much prefer that, I think. Certain people for me just feel like they should be heels, and they are one of them. We then get a Jay Briscoe promo ahead of the fight on the farm that he's going to have against his brother. So obviously, it's a Briscoe, so this is a super intense promo. He's going to tell us what's going to happen at this match. He says he's going to whoop his brother and knock him smooth out. He repeats the knockout part quite a bit. He says he let Mark win on the 500th episode, but now he's about to get knocked out. He's been doing this his whole life, and it will continue. And this is nice intensity from a Briscoe promo. You're always going to get that. But again, it's not a fresh matchup for me, personally. I feel like this is kind of the go-to when there's nothing else for these guys to do. Put them in a match with each other. I feel like I've seen it a bunch. The fact that it is on their farm adds a little bit of interest, if I'm being honest, because they'll do some crazy stuff for sure. And I figure in this time when you still have empty arena, this is when you should be experimenting with other venues and other things. So this makes sense to me. If you don't have fans anyways, go try something else. Otherwise, it kind of feels like I've seen this before, because I have. And the build for it this time kind of has been brief and a little bit lackluster, in my opinion. Probably be a fun match. But again, I want a fun match plus a cool storyline and something that I'm invested in and characters I care about. And it's not checking all the boxes there for me at this point. But then we get the main event, which is the Survival of the Fittest final match. six-person elimination match. We've got Flamita, Brian Johnson, Eli Isom, Chris Dickinson, Bandido, and Rhett Titus. So almost all of them have brief promo packages as they make their entrance. I'll summarize them quickly. They were all fine. I don't want to get into each one because they were just really quick standard. Brian Johnson has a mic as he enters. He rips on commentary quickly, says he loves having no crowd to bother him and to tell him that other people are better than him. They can all get bent anyways because we're about to start a Mech 8 of excellence. He tells the ring announcer to shut up and does his own ring introduction. I love Brian Johnson. His promos are awesome, just his intensity and his rage and stuff. So this was pretty standard for him. Eli Isom's next. He's focused and nothing will stop him. There might be a little bit more than that, but basically then he just says, these aren't just words, it's a promise. That is his catchphrase. His finishing move is also the promise, Brainbuster. Chris Dickinson's next, and he wants us to take a look at him. He's leveled the playing field since arriving. Who's going to stop him? Nobody has since Violence Unlimited, wrong show, got here. And this is the first step to the ROH World Championship. And Bandidos is really quick. He said he's not really interested in Flamita's issues, the problems they've sort of had in the past, that today is his opportunity and he's going to seize it. Titus, he says he's fighting for his family, and as the world champion, he can give his family a better life. He wants the others to know that it's nothing personal, it's just his profession. So this is now the second time I've noticed this catchphrase. I don't think it's a good catchphrase in the first place. I also think his delivery, where he suddenly gets super intense for this last line, is also, it almost makes me cringe, if I'm being honest. I think he needs to rethink this catchphrase personally. But after that, the match itself begins. I didn't take, obviously, move for move notes. I do have some details here. It's going to take me a minute to get through, so bear with me. But basically, here's what happens. We have Bandido and Flamita start out, and we're told that it's tag rules and lucha rules. So it is two men in the ring at the time, others waiting to be tagged in. But if either or both of the competitors exit the ring, another person can just jump in. And it's like first guy in is now legal under lucha rules. So that's sort of what we've got going here. So Bandido and Flamita fight to the floor. So then Dickinson and Titus take over in the ring with some holds and counters. I do love that with this empty arena, you can hear Brian Johnson just running his mouth basically from his corner for the good start of this match, right as it's happening. You can't exactly make out everything he's saying, but you can hear him just yelling the entire time basically. Dickinson gets caught with a power slam for a one count and he escapes to the outside. So Isom is now in with Titus for some counters and near falls. Titus dives to the floor onto Dickinson and Johnson. Johnson steps in to face Isom at that point. Get a big back body drop by Isom, who then sort of heads to the ropes and moonsaults onto Titus and Dickinson on the floor. So Johnson's the one left in the ring. He's posing. And of course, he gets a surprise super kick from Bandido. Flamita catches Bandido up top, and Bandido hits a fall-away moonsault slam onto the other four men. So he does a follow-away moonsault slam with Flamita in his arms onto the other four men on the floor. Probably the high spot of this match. Pretty crazy looking thing. Looked like they executed it safely though, which is good. Flamita then has a little stretch here where he looks really great, taking out Bandido, then Johnson. But his match ends as Bandido catches him with a roll-up. Flamita is the first to be eliminated. Flamita, of course, snaps. He has a history with Bandido, attacks Bandido, power bombs him through a table at ringside, then puts a chair over top of Bandido, hits it with another chair repeatedly, and Ray Orris has to show up to make the save, and Flamita finally leaves. So a nice, Flamita didn't get a lot of time in the match, but he did get a vicious post-match attack, I guess, which is good, and another spot he got to put Bandido through a table, which is one of the sort of lingering things from this match. The officials tend to Bandido as Johnson and Isom are now the legal men in the ring. Isom has an armbar. Johnson pulls down Isom's knee pad to distract him, then hits a fisherman suplex for two as Isom goes to adjust the knee pad. Coleman says that, Caprice Coleman on commentary, that is, says that Brian Johnson is everything you want in a meal, but it's served on a trash can lid. And I think this is the absolute best thing I've ever heard him say. I thought it was a hilarious line. Really, really good stuff from him there. So Brian Johnson, sort of, you can hear him. Apparently Isom is from Indiana. He says something like, I'm sure the seven people watching in Indiana are proud of you. And then he looks into the camera and says, Indiana sucks, starts stomping Isom. And then I noticed like there's nobody but these two. All the other guys have just sort of stayed on the floor or something. So in my notes, I have, where did everybody else go? Slowly, I see Dickinson kind of poking his head on the apron, and I see Titus up back in his corner. So We get a Ripcord Northern Lights release suplex by Eli Isom here, which is really nice. Headbutt by Johnson, Tower of Doom. Then he goes for the process, but Isom rolls to the floor and Dickinson hops in to take his place instead. We get a Titus dropkick to Dickinson and a belly-to-belly to Johnson for a two count. Johnson uses a few shady tactics to get control before a diving top rope clothesline. Then he hits the Mecha locomotive sort of running clothesline. And he goes for the process again, but gets countered by a Titus dropkick and two running corner boots, I think it was. Top rope knee drop by Titus. He pins Brian Johnson to eliminate him. Then Dickinson strikes, hits a dragon screw on Titus before working the knee a little bit more. He applies a knee bar at the culmination of this knee work, and we get a quick tap out by Rhett Titus, and he's out of the match now as well. Bandido finally returns after being taken out by Flamita once he was eliminated. So he finally comes back and gets immediately stomped by Dickinson. So Bandido, Dickinson, and Eli Isom are the three left here. We get an armbar by Dickinson, but Isom, for some reason, pulls Bandido to the ropes. Even the commentary team criticized the decision because, I mean, you would think he would just stay there and let a Bandido get eliminated and then fight one-on-one against Dickinson, but he chooses to take the high road or makes a bad decision or something because he helps Bandido sort of save from this submission. So Dickinson works Bandito's arm some more and then starts taunting him. Bandido then flips out of a German, but Dickinson hits a judo throw, applies a cross arm breaker, and once again Eli Isom pulls Bandido to the floor to break the hold. Then Isom hops in the ring, engages in a strike exchange with Dickinson. Dickinson has Isom in a choke in the ropes, but Bandido shows up to kick Dickinson, and that kick puts Dickinson in the perfect position for the 21-plex. Bandido executes it, hits it to eliminate Dickinson and leave Bandido and Isom as the final commercial break arrives. So we're going to go one-on-one after this commercial. We come back to a strike exchange and some kicks by Isom. Big clothesline by Isom. He hits a really cool-looking sidewinder suplex. Submission applied to Bandito's shoulder as commentary are sort of freaking out that Isom looks like he could win this. Bandido gets to the ropes to break the hold finally. We get the X knee strike, which is pretty impressive as well from Bandido, but his arm gives out as he goes to hit the 21-plex. We get an air raid crash instead by Eli Isom for a two count that looked really nice. A sudden dropkick by Bandido followed by a boot. Bandido then gets caught out of the air and hit with a nice tilt-a-whirl backbreaker from Isom for a two count. The promise is attempted, but escaped by Bandido, and he puts Isom in some sort of painful-looking submission. If Jack were here, he'd know exactly what it was. Targeting one of the arms and the neck looked really painful, like Isom barely has enough motion in his arm to tap out, but he does. So your winner of this match, and getting the winner also of a future ROH World title match, is Bandido, which is fantastic. Isom and Bandido adhere to the code of honor, shake hands, and respect, sort of after the match. And the show goes off the air shortly thereafter. Catch my breath there from that one. A lot of stuff going on in that match. And honestly, I probably didn't even detail all of it. So I really enjoyed this match. I thought it told several stories along the way. And I thought the finishing sequence between Bandido and Eli Isom was excellent. They really have something in Isom, I think. I've been quite impressed with him. So you had Flamita got rolled up quickly by his enemy, right? So that may continue things with Bandido. He's going to be furious. Brian Johnson sort of got caught showboating and taunting, which makes sense with his character. Isom is sort of the young guy in there proving that he can hang with all these superstars, and he did that. And then you had Bandido being the babyface who had to overcome adversity, like a vicious attack being put through a table. He still comes back, finds a way to win. So that's a great story for him. There's lots of really good action in this match, some really cool spots early on specifically, I thought. For me, just as I don't know why, I thought Dickinson, Bandido, and Isom looked really impressive in this. I thought a really fun main event overall. Bandido was my pick to win this, so both I thought he was and I wanted him to because he's one of my favorites, so I'm glad that this is the result. I think they need a believable babyface challenger for Roosh at this point, and Roosh and Bandido honestly should put on an excellent match. And if it were me, I'd probably put the belt on Bandido. Roosh has had an incredibly long run, and I do like him, but he doesn't seem to be around very much at this point. And whereas Bandido has been on TV regularly for the last little while, so maybe it's time to move the championship onto Bandido. That would be my choice, but we'll see what happens, I guess. So my overall thoughts, this show, I mean, it's mostly about the main event, right? And I really did enjoy that, so that's helping the overall grade for sure. The opening match had no finish, which can be frustrating, but it served to further a feud that isn't my favorite, in my opinion. It's one that's been kind of dragging on ROH. But I did think Dutch looked promising in his debut. And so that combined with a really good main event that I talked about already, and it had big stakes, which helps too, right? That match was for something, a title shot. So I like this show quite a bit. I gave it a B+. I wouldn't quite say that people have to go out and see this main event. Like, that's what I'm always hoping for, right? Like, you got to go see this if you haven't seen it. It's not quite to that level, but it was very good. So if you're interested in ROH or you're a lapsed ROH fan or something, I would say for sure go check it out, because it's a really fun match and there's some cool spots and some cool stories being told there. So yeah, overall, very good show, a very solid B+ from me. Well, I think that's going to wrap up my review this week of Ring of Honor Wrestling. And I'd just like to thank anybody and everybody that's checking out the podcast or coming back once you've already checked it out. Really appreciate it. It's just a hobby. We started in a pandemic that's now become something that we just want to keep on doing because we enjoy it. So thanks for all the support. I would love to hear some feedback from any of you. fnswrestling@gmail.com. That comes directly to me. fns_wrestling_podcast is Instagram. That goes to my son, Jack, who's on broadcast with me on our Saturday main show. So he'll get that on Instagram. Or if you're listening on YouTube, just leave a comment in YouTube. I promise I'll get back to you. So far, I've replied to anyone that leaves any sort of feedback, positive or negative. So I don't know. We'll be back for sure on Saturday with episode 50 of our main show. I don't think we have anything planned before that, but you never know. And just keep your eyes out wherever you're listening to this. You'll be notified, I'm sure, if we put up anything new. But we'll definitely see you on Saturday, if not before then. And until then, take care.